I gotta go, American woman. Yeah.
Are you an artist, band, or record label? We want you to send us your music so we can put it on the radio. Not only this station, but stations across Canada. Check out earshot-distro.ca and share your music with more than 100 radio stations and programmers across the country. Earshot Distro is made by and for the campus community radio sector to help emerging musicians. Uploads cost $7 per song or $50 per album. Learn more at earshot-distro.ca.
And welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba.
Our guest this evening is Erin Frances Brown, an accomplished Canadian artist based in Winnipeg. Erin creates biomorphic painted reliefs that merge nature with internal experience and play in the zone between abstraction and representation. She graduated from the University of Manitoba with a Bachelor of Fine Arts, has received numerous awards and grants, such as from the Canada Council for the Arts, the Cecil C. Richards Memorial Award, Achievement in Life Modeling. Erin has been a resident artist at the Vermont Studio Center Residency in Johnson, Vermont, and interned with Smithsonian's Hirshhorn Museum and Sculpture Garden with a conservation internship. Erin has been in numerous solo and group exhibitions, such as at 226 Main Street Gallery and the Bueller Gallery in Winnipeg. Erin has her own personal studio practice and is the studio manager to Sarah Ann Johnson. She has been involved in community work with Art City as an example. Erin has also had experience curating with MAWA, mentoring artists for women's art. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
You had a brilliant solo exhibition entitled Garden Portals at 226 Main Street Gallery over the summer here in Winnipeg. Would you like to tell us more about this show and the work that you had in it?
For sure, I'd love to. So Garden Portals was an exhibition of painted reliefs, and it's really a project that I started 5 years ago when I first started making painted reliefs, and they range in size from the very small to the monumental. I think the biggest work that I had there was 6 feet tall by 14 feet wide. It was a bit of a monster. And they ranged in color from white to polychrome to black. And within them, I was really exploring pareidolia as an artistic process, which is that phenomenon where your brain makes sense of random information. Like when you look at clouds and you see a bear, that kind of thing. And I really wanted to play with it because it had become an important part of my process as I began doing the painted reliefs. It's a way of finding forms and compositions and just being surprised by what you find in the studio, which is just an experience that I adore. And for this exhibition, I was taking my environment and transforming it into this chaos that would cause this kind of effect. So the work really became an extension of my process, and it was because of my love of the process that I wanted to invite viewers to take part in it and really finish the work in their own minds.
Can you tell us a little about your background and when you first began making painted reliefs?
For sure. I grew up in the Interlake, north of Winnipeg, and I was always drawing on walls and making costumes. But equal to that, I think, is where our house was located. We were in the middle of a bunch of fields. Like, there was nothing around except grass and just wonderful little things to look at. So my sisters and I, when they weren't busy doing more sophisticated older sister things, we would explore and make forts, and we would really just look and invent, which I think was really important to what I do now. Anyways, fast forward to university, where I trained in sculpture and painting, and I both loved it and really struggled, honestly, then and for the next decade. I always had this feeling of what I wanted to make, but I kept missing the mark on the form. I would try again and again, and it never felt quite right till about 5 years ago. I got so fed up. I just sat down and made a list of all the things that I loved about what I was doing and all the things I absolutely hated. And also, I looked at artists, and I was really honest with myself about what I loved about it and what I wanted to see and enjoyed seeing. What I ended up doing was bundling together all the things that I loved about painting and that I loved about sculpture, and discarding everything else that I had been carrying as baggage for a while, and began making painted reliefs. And there was a lot of experimentation that I had to do within that genre too, but I was on a path, and it was relief, if you'll pardon the pun.
You graduated from University of Manitoba, a fine arts honor degree. What was most valuable about your training, and what did you learn that you may have applied in your practice?
There was a lot. The first thing I'll mention is tools. And if you can imagine a little heart drawn around that word, it was just having access to a workshop and being taught how to use everything. I was so painfully green when I walked through those doors. I had to learn how to use absolutely everything. And well, it gave me self-reliance, both in art and the things that I wanted to make, and also in life, just being able to do things that I wanted to do. As far as specific techniques, modeling, mold making, casting, that's a big trio in what I do now. I was also taught to be a better painter, which was very useful. And also, we were exposed to a variety of disciplines. And I hadn't, at the time, lived enough, made enough to really understand the kinds of things I wanted to make and the kinds of processes that I would connect with. So really being given those options at that stage was a real gift that I could take advantage of later on. We were also taught about critical thinking. And that's a tough one because I had a lot of wonderful instructors, but all they could really do was throw me into the water. And then I had to learn to swim. And that really just took time to figure it out for myself. There was a lot of ways that the training at U of M really helped me out in my practice.
Is there a particular artist or group of artists that you turn to for inspiration or that you simply love their work?
Yeah, there's a bunch, but my favorites were the ones that really helped me out when I was changing paths, when I was going into making painted reliefs. So there's Max Ernst, Loie Hollowell, Wingeki Mutu, Tanya Marcuse, and I'll just go into detail with a couple of them. Let's see, Ernst was a surrealist artist that many people are familiar with. And what I really took from his frittage works was to find the fantastic in my surroundings and to just be open to that kind of wonder. We went about it different ways, but I really found that inspirational. Loie Hollowell is a New York painter, contemporary, and she makes bas-relief paintings about different themes than I work with, but she really opened my eyes to the expressive space between painting and sculpture. Also, maybe I'll mention a little bit about Tanya Marcuse too. She does these really expansive dioramas with decaying plant matter and it makes them into allegories, like finds different stories within them. I work with a lot of dying plant imagery too, and though we work with it differently, it's finding stories that fit within cycles of growth and decay is something that I'll be pursuing in future work. So it's more of where I'm headed versus the things that I've done.
Since your early paintings, what have been some of the elements and techniques that you've experimented with in addition to the ones you've mentioned?
Sure. There have been a lot of experiments. The first ones that I did were layering figures in plasticine panels. I was chasing this wild idea that I won't get into because it didn't really work. But what I found was that in layering these images together and also playing with the different kinds of relief, like there's high, there's low, there's sunken, there's counter, and putting all these things together, it really worked to break up the original image and make new connections. And this became really important to my process. And I had to do a lot of experiments with materials too. And when I was doing those, I would ask myself, do these materials feel the way that I want them to feel? Are they chemically compatible with the other materials that I need to use? The rubbers for the molds, a lot of them don't play nice together. And also paint, a lot of materials don't like to be painted. So it's a bit of a puzzle trying to fit them all together and see what works. I also had to figure out how to paint on relief, which was a challenge I wasn't really expecting. It's very, very different from painting on a flat surface. A lot of the gestures that you're used to doing just look awful. they look awful. And it was really amazing. But I did have some breakthroughs, like working with airbrush. The first time I did that was a really good day. We have to celebrate the small victories. It really combined color and form in a really natural and meaningful way that I was able to work with. And really, like, as I go, though I figured a lot of things out, I'll continue to tweak and make adjustments as I go. And really, that's part of the fun.
In doing some of these experimentations, can you walk us through your process from your ideas to a finished piece or series?
My ideas tend to come from making. So I'll start with the process. Right now, it starts with my environment. And since I'm working with mainly dying plants, fall is my time to shine. I'm out there taking photos, raiding the gardens of my family and friends, just sneaking into the backyard. And I take a million photos, like just more than I'll ever need, but just to document everything. And what I'm really looking for are compositions and gestures and shapes that either speak to an idea that I'm already thinking about, or that they just have this charged feeling to them. Like they could connect to something that I'm thinking about, but it hasn't quite reached the idea level yet, but it's simmering under there. And then in my studio, I bring all these images in and I start modeling them in plasticine on these wood panels. And it's a really hypnotic process, especially with the dying plants that I'm working with, like all the very intricate hills and valleys and curves that you have to follow. It really gets you into a mindset where ideas can start to pop up. And the idea for garden portals came from all the like weird and wild images that I was starting to see in this like chaos that I was creating. And the things that I'm thinking of doing next will focus more on recurring visions that I would see in the work. Anyways, and then once I'm done the modeling part, then I would get to the mold stage and then cast in epoxy clay. And then after that, I would paint. And I use acrylic wash and oil are my two favorite paints. And I would use a mixture of airbrushing and hand brushing. So it's really combinations of all of those. And really, I would know that a work is done. There's a technical standard that I try to meet, but also I look for a piece that I can fall into for a while, like really get lost in it. Then I feel like I've succeeded.
Can you discuss your relationship with color and how you decide on the palette for a particular piece or series?
I'm really looking for, well, a couple of things, but one of them is an emotional atmosphere with how the colors work with each other. But also I need to consider how the palette works with the relief. Maybe the relief has, in the way the forms rise and fall, maybe there's a bit of a flow to it that I can maybe bring out with the way that I transition the colors as I move around. Or maybe there's a specific image within the relief that, since it's like very ambiguous, that I want to pull out using color. And really, these are hybrid works. So the color doesn't exist on its own, and neither does the sculpture part of it. So I really have to consider both as I'm doing both. When I'm modeling, my head has been painting, and when I'm painting, my head is like in the modeling that I'm working on. So they really play off each other in that way.
How would you like to invite your viewers to experience and interpret your pieces as they interact with them?
It depends on the series. So for Garden Portals, I was really looking for the viewers to daydream when they looked at my works. I would nudge them in different directions with how I painted them and the titles of the works maybe, but it was a very gentle nudge. I wanted to do it so that I could let them take part in the process, as I talked about before. Like I really loved it. It lights up your brain to imagine a bunch of different things and try and knit them together. And so making the work an extension of my process and inviting the viewer to take part in that was the goal of that series. And in future, I'm planning to tell more specific stories, but I still think it's important in my work to leave some space for the viewers to bring themselves into it.
Would you like to take us into your studio and tell us about your space and what you're currently working on?
My space is amazing. I'm new there. I've been there about 2 years. I'm in the 90 Annabella building, which is just packed full of artists and creative people that I've had the joy of meeting. And because I've been there 2 years, I have fully nested, which means I have collected all my tools. I have all of my zones for all the different things that I need to do kind of figured out. And right now I'm working on a new body of work. It's all very fresh, but I'm continuing to work with plants. But as I mentioned before, I'm starting to tell more specific stories. And this one really came directly from working with the plants, because since they're dying, and maybe I should mention that part of why I work with dying plants is that they're already on their way to becoming something else. And I think it lends themselves to have this really ambiguous form. Like they're already, they're not quite a plant. They're not quite the soil. They're somewhere in between. And in staring at these all day, you really start to ruminate on cycles of growth and decay. And you see yourself in it too. Like you think about the plants, you think about your own life, and then it starts to grow outwards. You think about everyone else's life, past and present. You think about entire worlds, how they begin and how they decline. Galaxies even, their genesis and apocalypse. So you can really spiral as far as your brain can take you. And I started to see these images within the plants that I was working with. With a mental shift and with the right images, you could really dilate your imagination between the small and the expansive, just move back and forth between them. And there was this real peace in this perspective that I loved. And so I'm going to follow that for a while.
What's involved in the preparation and the installation of an exhibition?
There's a lot involved in that. But, well, for figuring out an exhibition, I've done it backwards and forwards. I have made a bunch of work just following where I felt like going without a real plan. And then after the fact, looked at everything and really tried to figure out the threads that bound them together. I've also gone forwards where I have an idea and then I really work towards it. Both work very well. Both are valid and common ways of doing it. Once I have all that figured out, I am a sucker for a scale model. I love making the gallery really itty bitty and printing out my works. And it's all very cute, but it's also very functional, where you can really lay everything out, see how they interact with each other, and imagine how people might move through the space. And then there's lots of technical challenges directly relating to the space, really depending on the kind of work that you make. Like for my last exhibition, I had, like I said, these two really big relief sculptures, which were very heavy. It was a diptych, and they were both over 100 pounds each. So each one was 6 feet by 7 feet. So you have to ask yourself things like, will they fit through the door of my studio, of the gallery space? Do I have the people power to get this into place? So there's a lot of teamwork involved there. And there's also, what is the wall made of? Can it support heavy pieces like this? And do I need special fasteners to keep it in place, keep everything safe? All very important questions to ask, and important to ask in advance. You don't want to get to the space and realize all of these things and have to think on your feet, because it takes time and you don't always have time. And also lighting. Lighting is very important, especially to relief sculptures, which live and die depending on the angle of light, the quality of light. It's amazing the difference if it gets a light from straight on versus from the side. Like there's different shadows, there's different, it really brings completely different shapes and characteristics to the piece. So you have to have time to figure all of that out and make sure that the gallery has the right kind of lighting that you can do that. Thankfully at 226, they had a great system set up. They were very lovely to work with, so I had a really great time.
With your interest in connecting with nature, have you thought about doing any outdoor sculptures?
I have considered it, especially with the really big works that I did. I think that they would work pretty well in public spaces. The application process for those kind of projects is a skill set all on its own. It's something that I'm definitely willing to look into. It's a skill set that I don't at the moment have, but I love public works. I love the level of viewer interaction that can happen with it. And also having the direct relationship between, since I'm working with natural imagery, and just having it right next to natural spaces would be an exploration that I would actually really love to do. In future, I'm definitely going to look into that.
What have you enjoyed and learned while working with the artist Sarah Ann Johnson?
I'm not sure I can sum this all up because I've worked with her for a very long time now. But on the practical side, I've learned how to run a busy studio. So production, shipping, supplies, constant problem solving. And it's also important to witness the grit and the courage and the curiosity that is required for a long career. It's really wonderful and inspiring to see. And on a personal note, Sarah has been an enormous source of support and enthusiasm and guidance, and I'm very grateful to her for that.
Do you want to tell us what's next for you?
Right now, I'm just excited to make more work, to be in my studio, continue showing. I'm at a space right now where I spent a really long time figuring out how to make these painted reliefs and really figure out where I fit in with other people, other artists. And it's given me a more solid foundation to engage with the art community. So I want to do more of that. I want to see more shows, seeing what other people are thinking about, and having more lovely conversations with people like you.
Thank you so much for that. Well, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to share your engaging story and valuable insight with our audience. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and we wish you continued success.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this.
For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5.
I will leave you tonight with an inspirational song by Lito Pimienta entitled Eso Que Tú Haces.
Cuando me exagero cuando
your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.
GPA's on the first floor of University Center is the place to soothe those hunger cravings, whether you're looking for candy, chocolate, chips, or some other type of snacky goodness. We proudly brew empty cup coffee made fresh daily and stock a variety of fresh sandwiches and baked goods from some of Winnipeg's top vendors. Our coolers are stocked with a wide variety of beverages guaranteed to quench your thirst. Swing by between classes and pick up what you need to survive your day. Currently open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on the weekends. We're proudly student-operated with pricing that fits your budget.
Since introducing the world to the sound of Cuba's golden era, Buena Vista Social Club has become one of the most celebrated musical legacies in history, a living tradition still filling stages from Havana to around the world. Now carried forward by Buena Vista Orchestra, the music returns with a powerhouse lineup led by violinist Rolando Morejon Reyes and world-class players connected to the Buena Vista Social Club, Celia Cruz, the Afro-Cuban All-Stars, and more. Don't miss Buena Vista Orchestra at the Burton Cummings Theater Sunday, October 25th. Tickets on sale now, $39.50 plus fees via Ticketmaster. Don't miss Buena Vista Orchestra live, October 25th, proudly supported by UMFM
Outright white supremacists are American first. I think they both sell merch. The whole place feels a little bit cursed. It's like somebody else might have been living here first. Incels and sellers from a long line of failures underneath rumble umbrellas, daily wiring with the fellas. Chromag, mag, hate cave dwellers. The tale is older than the tellers. The tale is older than old Yeller. The internet is incarnate, manifested, given birth. There's some spillage in a village not far from where I'm living here on Earth. It's a disgrace to the natural state. There ain't much that ain't. Hey, Bill. Hey, Billy. Hey, Sarah. Hey, Tom. Hey, Mike. Everything is constantly unlike anything you've ever seen before. Everything is greater than it's ever been before. Pardon the progress. Hate is part of the process. Catastrophic nostalgia. Delusions of freedom. I think we ate the last apple in the Garden of Eden. All the masks are off and they don't even try. They know that you know that they know and they don't even mind it. All the masks are off and they're getting lazy. They think you're so damn stupid. They think you're so damn crazy. Killing people from a distance in an instant at the insistence of a president with a blackmail gun to his head for the fun that he had in the dark ages. Pages and pages and pages and pages. They thought they'd get away with it. The minimum wage is outrage with it. Gonna burn someone at the stake for a fruit of the doom. Oranges and grapes. Hold on to your vapes, kids. Icicles and alligators and blood traitors and purveyors of strange behaviors and masqueraders and masked invaders and layers and layers and layers. Be good to your God and be good to your bear. Take your aspirin and your Roundup and say all of your prayers. All the masks are off and they don't even try. They know that you know that they know and they don't even mind it. All the masks are off and they're getting lazy. They think you're so damn stupid. They think you're so damn crazy. imagination is hacked. It's boiling and festering and stabbing itself in the back. Who here is surprised by that? Who here is blown aghast? If you want to know the future, simply look into the past. All the masks are off and they don't even try. They know that you know that they know and they don't even mind. And all the masks are off and they're getting lazy. They think you're so damn stupid. They think you're so damn crazy.
Winnipeg, you lovely little city. Oh, thanks so much for tuning in. What a great night. Just curl up, nice book, radio on in the back. Got thunderstorms all around. It's a perfect night to be joining this lovely station, UMFM 101.5. My name is Connor. You have found your way to the glorious Faculty of Sound, coming to you live from the University of Manitoba campus here in the heart of University Center. I look outside, a bunch of happy kids out there right now, graduating university. Convocation is wrapping up, it looks like. Be proud. What a long road to get to this point, so good for all of you, the new grads of, I guess, 2026. Hats off to all you. Lots of hard work, lots of late nights, lots of caffeine. All the delights that come with a university degree, and now you're out in the real world with the rest of us. One of us. Don't worry, it's a good time. But be proud of what you accomplished. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of work, and a lot of sacrifice to get through these degrees, so great job to all of you. You should be very, very proud. Know who else should be proud? Winnipeg Folk Festival. Hell of a lineup for this year, especially who we kick things off with. Jesse Wella's Masks Off, a song that just comes in with a couple middle fingers, calling all the shit out. And I'm